Today's conversation is with Stephen Predmore. Stephen is an engineer. He's been an engineer for many decades. He's a W-2 employee who's also been proactive in becoming a real estate investor on the side. And you're going to hear about how, in Stephen's words, he was fat, dumb, and happy, and all of a sudden he got punched in the face, not literally. I'm not going to give it all away, but financially, his security, you know, what he thought was secure source of income was just dried up instantly. And he talks a lot about how that changed his mindset and forced him to take action. Today's episode is a very relatable one, even if you haven't experienced exactly what Stephen has. This is one that you can learn from for sure, because I think when we tend to put all of our eggs in one basket, that can be quite risky. And now Stephen has multiple sources of income and is helping other investors invest passively into specifically multifamily projects. He's been a single family investor as well as a multifamily investor, both active and passive, and he's shifting a little bit more toward the passive side. And he's helping engineers and other investors understand how that they can get into the game as well. It's a very practical episode, very relatable episode, and I think you're going to get a lot out of this. Thanks for listening.
From adversity to abundance, hosted by entrepreneur and seasoned real estate investor Jamie Bateman, is the ultimate guide for active and passive investors seeking clarity, mental fitness, and the confidence to make inspired decisions in the world of real estate. With a decade plus of investing experience across various niches and a background as a combat veteran, former Army officer, and multi-million dollar mortgage note company owner, Jamie brings a wealth of knowledge and inspiring stories to each episode. Through weekly episodes featuring insightful interviews with industry leaders and solo explorations of mindset and strategy, listeners will uncover actionable advice and tips to overcome challenges and build lasting financial success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, From Adversity to Abundance is your roadmap to turning obstacles into opportunities and achieving financial freedom.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Bateman, and today we have with us Stephen Predmore. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Great, Jamie. I'm excited to be here and tell you my story and maybe learn some nuggets about real estate investing and how I would do things differently.
I love it. For the listener, Stephen and I are in the same local area. We've met briefly in person before at the local pickleball club, which is an addiction that I have. Not sure about if you're quite as into it as I am, Stephen, but
I'm not.
I've played pickleball with your son several times. So I'm hoping to get to know you even better in the next 45 minutes or so. So for the listener who may not be familiar with you, Stephen, talk about what things look like in your life today and some of the abundance that you're currently living in.
Sure. So, I'm a full-time mechanical engineer. I work for a major aeronautical company here in the Baltimore region. Started out in the single family space. I've grown significantly in the past couple of years, from 2 units to over 200 units. It's like 100x increase in units over a very short period of time. And still working my W-2, but that's kind of my abundance. Enjoy scaling and doing bigger deals now.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to get into this, but I think there must be some peace that you have. I'm sure you're very busy, but there's probably an element of peace and security knowing that not all of your eggs are in one basket and that you've got multiple streams of income. When you say 200 units, is that, I'm assuming some of that is like as a passive LP investor?
Some of it is passive. Some of it is active. Some of it is JV. Some of it is a co-GP. Yeah. So kind of gotcha. A mix of all the above.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. I can't wait to get into that in a few minutes. Let's jump back though into your backstory. I think your story is going to be relatable for a lot of people. Whether what's happened to you has happened to the listener or not. It's something that I think could happen easily to anyone. But let's jump back. Where do you want to start?
So I'll start in college. Got a degree in mechanical engineering, and I, got a job immediately out of college up in Buffalo. Wasn't excited about living in that area, so after a few years of working, it was actually at a General Motors facility. I decided to move down to Baltimore with the family, and was fat, dumb, and happy working for a major auto manufacturer, highly technical. We worked at a very high-end technical new stuff, batteries, electronics, a lot of very, very the skills were not easy transferable. So I was
Sure.
very comfortable and I didn't feel like anything would ever happen to me.
Right. So, and about what year did you move to Baltimore?
It'd be 1997.
Okay. Going back a
Yeah.
couple decades,
Almost
basically.
30 years ago, yeah.
More than almost three, yeah. So, okay. So 1997, and you'd already been out into the workforce before that. And so essentially you were doing well in your career and everything. Not that you didn't have challenges with family or work or anything, but for the most part, you were making decent money and had a quote unquote secure job, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what happened?
So I remember it was the Monday after the Super Bowl of 2019, and we wa all walked into the office, and I was an engineer. I was also in the IT area. Everybody got fired. The entire department was walked out. It was just an incredible feeling, and we never saw it coming. It was a punch to the gut. I was so indignant. I didn't feel
You
like
didn't
they even
believe it.
had the right. It
Oh,
was just like, and so, but it was a top level decision. Like it came down. My boss wasn't even aware that this was happening. So it was a
wow.
top level decision that
Right.
they closed the entire department. So yeah, that was the big seminal moment in my life,
Yeah.
where, I 20 plus years in this industry,
Right.
and, just let go, just like that.
That's, I mean, it's terrible and it's just incredible. Like, so leading into that, and say 2018, I guess, basically, you can be as specific as you want, but how were things looking for you financially? You don't have to give, your salary, but just how was like your day-to-day life and family life specifically in relation to, your career?
I mean, we were fine. We had two adults working, two young kids, but we weren't saving aggressively. We were starting to put money into a 529, but we weren't aggressive savers, I would say. Also during that time, we used to love watching HGTV shows, and so I
Oh,
always
yeah.
had that real estate kind of bug back in my
Sure.
mind. Like, yeah, I could do that. I'm a handy guy. I could do that. And so that was
Right.
kind of always bubbling.
Right.
When I d got fired
Yeah.
that day, I had always been also listening to Bigger Pockets.
Yeah, right.
So I knew that if I had an old 401k,
Yeah.
that I could tap into that, and I can convert that to a self-directed IRA.
Sure.
So believe it or not, the day that I was fired, I remember sitting in the parking lot, and I had a 20 years with a company. I was thinking, now I could tap into
There's always an
that.
opportunity or an upside,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. Of course I was freaking out. I got two
Yeah.
kids, I got health insurance,
Of
so
course.
there was a lot of emotions on that day.
Sure, I can only imagine. I mean, and so and your plan up till that day was just to, I don't want to say ride it out, but just stay in that career and do that for the rest of your professional life.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I didn't have to, sometimes you need a moment like that to kind of
Yeah.
smack you in the face to
Right.
kind of to say, what are you doing? You're not
Right.
saving aggressive enough. You're not
True.
collecting hard assets. You're not diversified enough.
Yeah. So
So
you and you Like that day, I mean, that was it. You didn't, it's not like they gave you 2 weeks notice or anything like that, right? It was
That
that day.
day, no. So
Yeah.
IT department, they typically just don't let you walk you out, and they don't,
Yeah.
they
They don't want you
immediately
to,
disable your account,
right.
so you can't download files
Yeah.
and put, so yeah, it was very sudden. I grabbed my box. Actually, they didn't even allow me to collect my box.
Wow.
They had somebody else pack up my desk, which is a little
Wow.
bit insulting as well.
Yeah, I've got a, I know you said you've listened to a few episodes. I've told this a few times, but I'm not, won't tell it now. But I ended up resigning and I was with the government. So there was a little bit more security there, at least there used to be. But when you said the box, it triggered a little memory there, or I've had my stuff packed up into a box and moved into, by somebody else. And it just kind of put off in the corner there. And it's just, I wasn't let go. I'm not saying it's the same thing, but I definitely felt like a number and just did not feel, like they cared at all, about me as a human. But so, okay. I imagine this takes days and weeks to even just kind of process. What's going through your mind? What were your next steps at that time?
So one of the nice parting gifts they give you was like resume consulting services and
That's
whatnot. So we worked on that. I had a somebody to help me with this, brushed up my LinkedIn profile, a lot of types of things to, immediately start getting out there and applying. So
right.
that's what I was working on. Of
Gotcha.
course, you're working on, I mean, I did have a severance as well, so there was a few months of severance,
Some cushion there. Yeah.
cushion there. But
Right.
yeah, but in the back of my mind, I'm also thinking about the whole, now I have money, because
Yeah.
that's always the hardest part, your first deal. Like, I'm
Right.
not sure, like, even in Baltimore, which is a very low cost of entry and market,
Sure.
high cash flow, you still need $10,000 to $20,000 just to kind of get the ball rolling. Well,
For
I didn't
sure.
really have that, but now I did.
Got it.
So that was kind of like the impetus to kind of get going, and I ended up buying, I bought my first house for $65,000,
Okay.
single
Nice.
3-2 in Baltimore,
Baltimore
kind of a
City.
s Baltimore City, kind of a
Yeah.
C class area,
Right.
and put about $40,000 of rehab into it, and I was renting for $1,400. So from a cash flow perspective, I was crushing the 1% rules, like
Right.
1.3,
Right.
and it looked great on paper. Everything looked great on paper.
Right. Yeah. But yeah.
But didn't end up that way. I don't know if you want me to
Right.
get into that
Yeah.
now.
Yeah. So, I mean, so we're not going to focus on the rest of your W-2 career, but you do currently have a W-2. It sounds like you got a job relatively quickly after getting let go, right?
I did. I'm
Yeah.
a licensed engineer. I have, it wasn't that difficult. It was more just kind of deciding where I wanted to work, traffic and
Sure.
shifts
Gotcha.
and that.
Yeah, you're highly skilled and in a great industry, to be able to land on your feet there. But a lot of people honestly would have just done that and not changed course or started adding real estate to their portfolio. So you said you had been listening to Bigger Pockets. Now you had a lump sum of cash or at least payments coming in. I'm not sure how that was structured, but a little cushion there. And before you bought your first deal though, what was, besides just kind of watching HGTV and listening to Bigger Pockets, that's different from buying a deal. So like the decision point, really, how did you decide I'm going to buy a rehab slash rental property?
Again, I'm a mechanical engineer. I'm a very handy guy. I just knew I could do it.
Yeah.
I started attending some meetups as well, so
Okay.
that's certainly something that I recommend for anybody just starting out.
Sure.
It's just attending some meetups and talking to people that are doing it, and
Absolutely.
that's the push that I needed.
Yeah.
I met a banker there who kind of coached me on that and the self-directed IRA and different things
Sure.
that just pushed me over.
Right. Yeah,
So
got it.
that's how I did it.
And for those who are not familiar, Baltimore can be, it's, I know a lot of cities tend to be like this, but it's just very block by block, block by block. And it's, sounds like, I don't know where you bought that, but I think you alluded to this. A lot of properties can look really good on paper, and in reality, it's could be a ton of work, maybe a lot of vacancy, and a lot of additional rehab even after, or CapEx that's needed even after the rehab that you did. So how did that first deal turn out in the longer term?
So it went well for about 6 months, and then COVID hit and my tenant stopped paying and I was unable to get them out. Maryland's a very blue state, very tenant friendly. And it was my first time doing it. So here's another lesson learned. I wanted to do everything myself. I was indignant that this person wasn't paying. So I was going to take them to court and I was going to see through this that they did pay me. A total waste of time. Complete waste of time. I don't know how many days I had to take off to go down to the Baltimore City courthouse and get delayed another month because they were sick or something like that. They didn't show up. So anyway, it didn't turn out well. So when I did finally get them out, and I'd lost 6 months of rent,
Which is a lot.
which is a lot, and I'm still paying the mortgage. I kind of pivoted to the Section 8 route. Because I'd heard, that was a guaranteed way to do it. So that same house, I just made it a Section 8 rental. And that worked out better for a bit. You get the guaranteed rent on the first of the month, at least a portion of it,
Most of it, yeah.
most of it.
Yeah.
That was going well for about the first 8 months. And then even that small portion that the tenant had to pay, she started falling behind on.
Gotcha.
So it was just a hassle. Dealing with tenants and there's some of their sob stories and so I ended up selling that after 1 year of Section 8 rental.
Gotcha. So a little over, wait, maybe eight. How long did you own it for in total?
Like 2 years.
Years. Okay.
2 years, yeah.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, honestly, a lot of people may have just quit real estate at that point, so kudos
Right.
to you because I know you obviously didn't.
Right.
Yeah, it can be challenging for sure. I mean, yeah, my first was, I guess it was my second rental really, because our first one was, we just got lucky. It was a condo, and I put an ad in on Craigslist, and a single father, applied, and he's been there for 16 years, never missed it. I mean, he pays early every month. It's just like, so that's the kind of the numbers weren't amazing, but it's just like it was really pretty far on the passive side of the spectrum. And then the second one, which was more after I had really decided to do this more, take it more seriously as far as real estate investing, was an attorney. An attorney was our tenant, and she started to move in and then changed her mind, and she wanted to break the lease. And I guess when you said you were indignant, that's kind of how I was. I was like, wait a minute, you can't break the lease. What are you talking about? And so she created, I guess legally, I'm not actually supposed to go into too much detail, but she lawyered up and created some
Yeah,
stories about why,
sure.
she couldn't be there. And
Yeah.
but I guess stepping back or fast forwarding and zooming out, you start to realize, like, don't let your emotions get into it too much, because at the end of the day, that would have been a terrible tenant to have, long term. So the
Sure.
lawyers I did consult with said, hey, just be thankful that she's not your tenant, because she's showing you she wouldn't be a fun tenant to have. So
Yeah.
you missed, and I was concerned about vacancy for long, many, many months. We ended up missing out on 2 or 3 months of vacancy, and I mean of rent due to the vacancy. But yeah, it's just like sometimes it's just not worth fighting those battles. And I know we're gonna you transitioned eventually from single family into multifamily. I'm curious for the listener who may be a newer real estate investor, what would you say about self-managing your properties? Let's say single family properties. We did that. I did that for several years initially, and now it's like I love having a property manager. But curious what your thoughts are there.
My thoughts are you should do it for a year.
Okay. All
I
right.
think there's tons of value in
Yeah.
learning the process and
Sure.
in that and you've then you really do value your property manager who
That's
handles that
right.
for you.
That's right.
But I think it's good. I did some of the repairs as
Yeah.
well. And again, I wouldn't do that again in the future. I wouldn't go to court by myself. A lot of these things I've just kind of learned like. Got to go through it once, And that to do,
Right.
you realize there's professionals that do it much better for you, cheaper than
Right.
ultimately cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. You can I can now I trust my property manager, but I know if they're doing a good job or not, ripping me off because I did it for a while. Or if they should be doing better at filling, reducing vacancies, et cetera. So did you stay in the single family game for a while after that?
No, so I ultimately had two single families, and when I sold the first one, I ended up rolling that into my first multifamily syndication.
Okay.
I had joined a couple mastermind groups
Yeah.
after my single family days, and just started to see the bigger picture.
Right.
Started networking with people that had done this before, and I just saw the numbers. It
Right.
just made sense as an engineer. I could see, one vacancy on my single family is, or
Wipe you
one
out.
hot water heater going out is killing my cash flow for the year.
Right.
So I pivoted and started putting money into various types of multifamily deals. Again,
Okay.
I started with a syndication. I invested in like a fund that was
Yeah.
set up over multiple assets.
Yeah.
Then
Th those were
we
multifamily assets.
multifamily
Yeah.
and a one hotel.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, we have a mortgage note fund. I mean, they're all generally the same as far as first lien mortgage notes, but for oftentimes, in multifamily, as you know, it's one project that you're investing in, with many different people. So how did you come up with the capital to make all of those investments?
So I started saving aggressively.
Okay.
I kind of had a I also have a side hustle that is adjacent to the space. I run a handyman business on the side.
Okay.
And I started funneling all that money all into real estate, all into
Got it.
back into the business.
Yeah.
I started hiring, VAs and helping with
Nice.
that. I brushed up my website. I started paying for more, a bigger, a nicer CRM,
Yeah.
more automation. So kind of just honestly, to this date, everything that I've earned is just going back into the business.
Right. But I say, but by the way, you said business, and it's like, I think the key is you weren't treating it like a single family rental or just, I mean, you're starting to treat your real estate investing like a business, even if we're talking about putting capital in passively as an LP. You were treating this as a business, it sounds like, with systems and hiring VAs, and I'm a big fan of working with VAs as well. Okay, so just talk to us about the growth over the next few years.
Sure. So I did that first syndication. Then, within these masterminds, there's a lot of people like me that are kind of just wanting to do their own deals. And
Yeah.
so we kind of teamed up, a few of us, and we've purchased a couple properties as a JV. So we've done a couple as a JV deal. We bought a 30 unit in Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh,
We have a
wow.
23 unit in West Virginia. We've done a syndication, a 54 unit in North Carolina. So kind of doing that in
Right.
addition to also investing in other operators' deals as an LP.
Gotcha.
So
Okay.
I'm kind of doing a lot of different things right
Yeah.
now, and I'm certainly folk like I like. I did like I said, we did the deal in Alaska. We've exited that. I would never do that again. I'm kind of now like narrowing my focus onto where I want to invest, how I want to invest, and the people
Yeah.
that I want to invest with. So,
Right.
yeah.
It's important for sure. Okay, and so and at this point, what does your portfolio look like? You touched on it earlier, but maybe in a little more detail.
So I'm going to say over 200 units. Some is JV, some is a co-GP, some is an LP.
Gotcha.
You have some self-storage units, but really focusing on large multifamily now, value add, red states, with top tier operators now.
I think that's the key, right?
Yeah, it's the operations. I've gotten burned on some where I didn't do the proper due diligence. I trusted the capital raiser that I was working with, and
Yeah.
but yeah, so now it's a lot more doing due diligence on the operator,
Right,
visiting
right.
them, looking at their properties, looking at their underwriting, that type of stuff.
Yeah, so you and your partners generally bring the capital, right, to place in those situations, right?
Yeah, so with
Yeah.
my company, Talbot Investments,
Yeah.
we raise capital for large syndication deals.
Right.
We analyze the deal. We actually have a fund structure now, so
Okay.
we're able to write a larger check as an LP, and
Nice.
we get better returns for writing that larger check.
Okay, so it's like a fund of fund model kind of thing.
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how, one of the things I realized years ago with, kind of trying to market to clients was, all right, most people fit in either the active or passive bucket, generally speaking, right? Either you have money and but you don't have the time or the energy or the desire to learn how to be an expert real estate operator, or you don't have money and maybe you're younger, but you have energy, maybe you have time, and
Right.
you want to learn this and you want to run a business. Usually people tend to gravitate to one or the other, but
Right.
more and more I've realized there is this kind of overlap. If you did a Venn diagram, there's this kind of person in the middle, and I think I'm one of them because I'm a passive investor as well. And we've actually started in our business starting to try to we're starting to try to serve some of those people where they may have capital, but they want maybe more of the control versus putting their money into a fund because let's face it, you essentially lose almost all control once you put your money into a fund. And that's not, I mean, I run a fund, I invest in funds, I'm not anti-fund, but there's that middle ground where it's like, okay, they're sort of an active passive investor. It seems like you fit into that
I
category.
do. Yeah, and that's where the JV deals kind of come in.
Yeah.
I have a couple of them right now. If the opportunity comes up, I would invest in a JV deal. I want it to be a little bit closer to me. Some of the surrounding red states that could invest in.
Yeah.
But at least from my business perspective, like
Right.
I'm typically just raising money for other operators' deals. That's kind
Yeah.
of where I am. And I've
Right.
this is all it's changed, right?
Sure.
I never thought I would be like a full-time capital raiser. That was just so foreign to me. But
Right.
as my job has changed, actually my W-2 is starting to get a bit more hectic,
Okay.
and I'm not able to do some of those JV things that I need to do.
Sure.
So I'm kind of transitioning more into just kind of telling on other engineers like my
Yeah.
story. And kind of showing them, hey, you don't have to
You
be
can
a
do it too.
millionaire to invest in these deals.
Right.
You can take money from an old 401k and you can
Right.
roll that into a deal.
Yeah.
And honestly, I make better money when I invest with these
Yeah.
bigger operators, which
Yeah.
is just interesting. But yeah.
Well, you alluded to it earlier about trusting and experts who to do their job, right?
Yeah.
Obviously you need to vet them for sure,
Sure.
but we see a lot of engineers. I see a lot of engineers come over into the real estate space writ large, I guess you would say. A lot of them, this is a broad generalization, and even the term engineer is pretty broad, right? But a lot of the engineers I've worked with are obviously very analytical and very smart, but sometimes don't want to take action, and they've run the analysis on. I've mentored people who've run detailed analysis on hundreds of mortgage notes, not using AI, manually, and never even bid on a note. It's like,
Yeah.
and they have money.
Yeah.
And so how do you get over that hump, for the engineer or anyone else who suffers from analysis paralysis? How were you able to take action? Does it go back to you getting let go, or why do you take
Getting
action?
let go, going to meetups, meeting people. I mean, I was an action taker.
Yeah.
Yes, I had spreadsheets, but I was going out and meeting people and shaking hands. I
Right.
think that's kind of what got me over the edge. Because yeah, you can
Gotcha.
sit behind a PC and look at those spreadsheets all day,
Right.
and you can always talk yourself out of a deal.
Oh, for sure. There's always a reason not to invest. And the truth is, though, the numbers are what when as soon as you buy the deal or invest, the spreadsheet is going to be wrong. So
Right.
it's never going to be correct.
Yep.
But So,
So it's just getting out of that and getting out and being comfortable. I mean, that's scary. Those first meetups, I remember, it was very
right.
scary walking into a meeting. I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't have any real estate experience.
Yeah.
So I think you just got to get over that. Maybe find a friend that'll go to your first meetup with you.
Right.
That's helpful.
Have I seen, I think I've seen online you've been going to the Mid Maryland meetup. Is that that's a fairly new one with Marco Barrio, is that right? Okay. Yeah, he's a note guy as well. I need to get out there. I've talked to him about that and have to go there soon. But that's monthly, right?
It is monthly.
Yeah, gotcha.
But it's mid Maryland. I'm not really investing in Maryland anymore,
Right.
so
Yeah. Right. Is it right? Is it the right fit? But what would you say to the person who, what says I have a W-2 and a family, I don't have time to invest in real estate. How are you approaching that?
I say you should really look at passive investing. It's not a REIT. You're not investing in a real estate stock. You're investing in hard assets where you get a
Right.
K-1, you get the de depreciation,
Yeah.
and that's a great way to get started.
Right.
If ultimately, like, you do want to be more active, I would still say invest passively in a deal.
Sure.
See what their communication is. See how they operate.
Right.
There's a lot of value in just seeing how other operators operate.
Sure. Absolutely. And you mentioned a couple of times a self-directed IRA. Some of our listeners are familiar with that, some aren't. And that term is used broadly to there are other types of self-directed accounts. But I think what people may not realize oftentimes is that, they think, well, I don't have a self-directed IRA, so I can't do that. Or I'd have to close out my 401k entirely and take all the money out of it. That's just not true. So talk to us about just briefly the process or what someone might be able to do if they're sitting, say they, I don't know, maybe they have 300K or 500K in their 401 or in their 401K. What could they do? They could take some of that money and create a self-directed IRA, right?
No, so n not directly from your 401k. No, if your 401k is your active job, you can take a 50% loan against that. Again, your active job. I've also
Right.
done that as well. So you can take that, and it doesn't that's not a self-directed. You can just take a loan against that and use it
Right.
whatever you want. You're repaying. The money's not in the stock market when you're doing
Right.
that.
The collateral
Now,
is your
for any
401k. Yep.
yes,
Yep.
so that's one avenue. The other
Right.
avenue is a former job.
Right.
So when you leave a job, your 401k sits there,
Yeah.
and you now have the ability to roll that into a self-directed IRA.
Right.
And most people don't. What they do is when they start their next job, the new administrator says, "Hey, do you want to just take your money and put it into your new 401k?" Most people
Right.
don't even think about it and just say yes, and then all of a sudden,
Yeah.
then you really can't access that. So it's when you leave that job,
Yeah.
you have access to it. Roll to self-directed IRA,
Yeah.
and you can invest that into alternative investments. You can do
Yeah.
invest it into oil and gas, crypto,
Right.
art, real estate. There's lots of
Yeah,
things
yeah.
you can do with that.
Yeah, it's interesting how the 401k has become the only essentially like the go-to investment vehicle or savings vehicle, retirement vehicle, I guess I should say. And when I've heard the guy who created the code, wrote the code for the 401k, I've heard him on podcasts saying, I never intended this to be this end all be all for everyone. And also what you can do is take, if you do leave your job and switch employers, you can, if you're not ready to create a self-directed IRA, you have the option of moving that money over to a traditional IRA that still invests in the stock market, whatever the S&P, until you research different real estate options. And then you can move that money into a self-directed IRA, right? Okay. But there are options there, and people often just don't realize they even have the capital that they could invest. So I think that's one of the things we're trying to educate people on. Not saying it's definitely right for everyone, but it's an option. And ultimately, this is it's your money, and you need to take control of it. So, how did you learn about self-directed IRAs? It was from the meetups, you said?
Meetups, bigger pockets,
Yeah.
honestly, that's kind
Yeah.
of what got me going. And then just calling some and
Right.
hearing it out. I actually
Sure.
went with the Checkbook Control self-directed
Okay.
IRA,
Yeah.
which was a little bit more to set up, but
Right.
just it kind of eliminates the intermediary as
Right.
far as making the decisions and
More
cutting checks to
control,
people.
lower fees, more flexibility, I guess. I've never done that.
There's more fees initially because you have to
Okay.
create
Oh, right. You got to create an
an
entity.
LLC and
Right.
you're the manager of the LLC. So,
Right.
yeah.
So, talk to us about the multifamily space in general. Like, it's been pretty rocky, I guess. I'm not a multifamily guy, but I have invested in multifamily projects and follow it from a distance. How are interest rates affecting NOI? And we don't have a crystal ball, but what are things looking like right now? And how do you foresee things going in the future?
Everything's on sale right now, Jamie. There's a lot
Nice.
of distress. There's a lot of distress in the market.
Yeah.
A lot of, multifamily commercial type stuff is typically on a 5-year
Yeah.
term.
Right.
And so a lot of deals are now in trouble because interest rates have tripled since they took down the deal.
Right.
And operators need to either come to the table with money to refi or just to show the liquidity or the DSCR that the bank wants.
Right.
So again, there's a lot of stuff on sale. There's a lot
Yeah.
of people in distress.
Right.
We've just found a couple deals where either it's bank owned or there's some type of disagreement between the ownership. There's been
Yeah.
private equity brought in to save the deal, and now they want to sell it. And so again, that's what we're seeing,
Yeah.
a lot of deals right now.
Okay. Yeah, because I know that if they're on floating rate debt, not only do their the debt coverage, it goes up, the expense of the debt, it goes up short term, but also that brings down the value of the property, right? Yeah, so that's put a lot of operators and owners in into a tough spot right now, so that's why things are on sale. It's at least a couple big factors there. So, and do you foresee that being true for a while?
I'd say the next 18 months or so, I think interest rates are going to start going down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, that this is why I liked being with bigger operators that
Yeah.
have large teams that kind of study
They do the research.
the macros
Yeah.
about it. I just know where I want to invest. I want to be like
Right.
in blue states. I like the Carolinas, Texas.
Yeah, you don't like the blue states, you like the red states, right?
That
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
that's correct. Yeah. And
Makes
just
sense.
because I got burned on it. So I just know that, and
Right.
these are booming areas, a lot of growth. The Research Triangle and Charlotte areas are just booming with new
Yeah.
population growth and rent growth. So yeah,
Right.
that's where I like to invest, where
Makes
people are
sense.
going.
All right, and so for you personally, you already said you're kind of your W-2 is getting a little crazy, and you're maybe shifting slightly more toward the passive side of things and helping
Yes.
other
Yes.
engineers understand how they
Yeah.
can do this, right?
Yep.
Awesome. Hopefully your employer isn't listening, but do you feel like do you plan to stay at your job for a long time, or?
I do. I think I give myself credibility. I give myself some street cred
Yeah.
by keeping the job and saying, "Hey, I was an engineer. I am an engineer, and I'm still doing this on the side."
Yeah. True.
There's value in being able to say that you can do both. And
Right.
I would do passive again. I wouldn't, I talk to a lot of people that, yeah, I want to flip a house. I want to do a rental. And I'm just like,
Right.
that may look great on a spreadsheet, but
Yeah.
you just are not taking into account your time
Right.
and what can go wrong. It just
Yeah.
doesn't show up on a spreadsheet. And
Right. Well, I think too, also people, there are Ponzi schemes out there and there are fraudsters out there. And so I think the key, one of the big things for me that you said earlier is just doing due diligence on the operator. And I think that's one thing that scares people off. Because about being an LP or being a passive investor is, well, I don't want my money to just vanish. And so how do I trust this person, the operator? So can you give maybe one or two things that you do to evaluate an operator?
So I look at history. I look at number of full cycle deals. So I want somebody that's been there around the, not just for the heydays of the early teens there, where everybody was making money. I want people that have gone full cycle on deals. I want people that understand the debt cycle and understand if they do get a variable rate loan, like what is their plan? Are they buying rate caps? What is their exit strategies? Because honestly, you can get variable rate debt on some of these properties, and it gives you more flexibility. It allows you to exit earlier if you've already hit your operational things. Otherwise, if you're locked into like a 5-year note, fixed rate, it looks great, but there's huge prepayment penalties if you wanted to get out. And so just people that understand that type of thing, I like the markets that they invest in. That's a huge thing for me. They have large the groups that look for tax abatements. One of the largest line items on an NOI sheet is your taxes. So looking for opportunities where you can get abatements and eliminate a large portion of those taxes. Also insurance. Insurance is the second largest line item. If you can have a large operator, you can get a large blanket. So there's lots of, economies of scale. Those are the things I look for.
And what age were you when you bought your first the rental in Baltimore?
40s, late 40s.
Late 40s. So, I mean, what do you say to the person who's like, you know what, I'm 45, I missed the boat, I can't be an investor.
I say take a look at your if you don't have the money right now, get educated. Find somebody you like, get educated in the space that you want to invest in. Look at ways that you can tap into some retirement funds. Some of these deals are crushing what I'm making in the stock market. Obviously, you want to be diversified. I still have a 401k. I still do all that. I'm diversified, but I take a portion of that and I put it into hard assets that have a better return. And let's tip our typical deals are we model it for 5 years, and we typically say you double your money in 5 years. So if you put in a 50K thing, we'll double it in 5 years. That's a 20% ARR. It's 16 IRR. So it's a better return that you're going to get than just, over the stock market.
Plus you're getting tax benefits and other things.
Tax benefits is a huge thing that people don't even think about. It's one of the only, I don't know where else you can get these types of tax benefits to shield some of your income. And once you've kind of been in, like done these deals every 5 years, the money starts turning over. You've doubled your money. Now you can invest that again, and it starts this hamster wheel of just, and that's where I'm at. I'm almost at the point where some of my earlier deals have kind of come full cycle, and it's going to start feeding itself.
That's
And I'm
awesome.
very excited about that.
And then you can get Peyton a new pickleball paddle.
He's got like four.
Just kidding. All right. So this has been great. I mean, I love that, there's not, I say this on the show often, but there's just not one way to get to quote unquote success. It's not like there's so many different ways to make money in real estate and outside of real estate. There's just so many paths that people take, whether you're working a W-2. I worked a W-2 for a while, and then I went part-time and still worked the W-2 for 7 years while I was building my real estate portfolio.
That's great.
And then eventually left my W-2, but I was able to keep health benefits and things through that whole period. But there's not one way to do it, and I like that personally. It's like there's many paths to be financially free. Awesome. What got some rapid fire questions for you. You ready?
Ready.
All right. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, whom would you choose?
I'm going to say George Washington. I read the Hamilton book. I saw the play, read the Hamilton book. It's just a fantastic book. And just the dynamic between Hamilton and Washington. Washington was such a reluctant leader, and he loved how he had Hamilton by his side because he was so eloquent with the pen and with, the speech. And just, I love that dynamic and hearing how they, yeah.
If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
I would say house hack. I would do a house hack
I love that.
immediately. That's such a great way to
For
Great
sure.
way to get started. You got to live somewhere anyway. You might as well do it for, live for free by renting, getting a
Rent out some
quad
rooms.
and renting out the 3 rooms to your buddies, and you're living for free.
I couldn't agree more. If you were given $10 million tomorrow, what would you do with it?
I'd invest passively in some real estate.
Awesome. What's a challenge
What's the
that you're
top tier operator? Not just anybody.
What's one challenge that you're facing in your investing career right now?
So it's certainly raising capital at a higher level that I'm currently doing. That's and it's a I'm new to the game. I'm just kind of been in this space, I would say, 6, 9 months. So it's learning how to, turn these conversations into people that actually will write a check for you, that believe in you enough. So that's certainly a challenge, is raising capital.
No, I think it's I can relate to that one. In your opinion, what's one of the most important personality traits for someone to be successful in real estate investing?
Gotta have grit, gotta be willing to get kicked in the mouth and get up again. I've been there. I was $10,000 in late rate rent payments from my first deal, and like you said, I could have walked away and said this is not worth it. But I knew real estate, was a great way to pass to and on the future. Like, it's not just
For
right
sure.
now. And so I took that $10,000 loss and said, you know what, that's a $10,000 learning
Well,
lesson.
a couple of things I'd pull from that is the long-term view, which you just mentioned. You weren't just so focused on the short term. You were still looking at the long term. So you knew you could have a couple of hiccups and challenges and still be okay. But secondly, you didn't quit, but with that, you did change course. So you pivoted. So, it's not like you said, no, I'm going to buy another house in the, on the same street and do the same thing again. So I think for me, sometimes I can get a little bit, have almost too much grit where I'm like too stubborn and don't shift. Of course, I think I've gotten better at it, adjusting to the industry conditions and whatever else. But so you didn't quit, but you did change your plan a little bit. So I think anything you want to add there?
Well, yeah, I also invested in myself at that point. It's like investing in a mastermind is not a cheap endeavor, and it's not immediate returns. So, some people would say, well, why are you spending, whatever, thousands of dollars to be in this group of people that all kind of look like and sound like you? And it's just like, it's contagious. You need to be around people like that.
What's a book or two that you could recommend for our listeners, Stephen?
I'm going to go with Who Not How. I've
Nice.
read it a couple times. Each time I've read it, I've hired an additional VA.
Nice.
It's really kind of just made me focus on the correct things.
It's an easy read, and most of his books are, but it's really valuable. I mean, it's got a lot of wisdom in it.
Just
So,
taking things off my plate that really I should not be doing. Social media, just scheduling calls, that type of stuff.
Court appearances. Just kidding.
Court appearances should be.
How has financial abundance made your life better?
Just more appreciative of trying to. It's great to be able to kind of show this to my kids as well. It's given me just a different outlook and more confidence
Nice.
in what I'm doing. That's it. And having clarity in what I want to do. I know where I'm going to be.
Where you're going, where you're headed.
I may still be working. Again, I like that street cred thing, and I don't know. I don't know if I were to walk away from my job, I think I would be very bored.
Yeah, for sure. They talk about retiring to something, not retiring from something. But I imagine it also gives you, does it give you a little the real estate income and profits, maybe upon the exit, gives you a little more security with if something does happen again with your W-2, right?
Sure, absolutely.
What's one question that you wish I'd asked that I haven't?
What is your why? Why are you doing this?
What's your why, Steven?
So it's my kids and my family. It's showing them, a better way than I did it. You need to invest in not just the, don't be so tapped into the stock market and the 401k. There's other assets that you can be growing.
Right.
The equity that you can get from a house hack is just incredible. You can get in
Yeah.
so cheaply. So yeah, it's just kind of showing them
Sure.
how I think that they could live a very fruitful and abundant life.
I love it. You mentioned your company earlier. Can you say the name again, and where can our listeners find you online?
Sure, Talbot Investments. And at talbotinvestments.com/engineer is a free download that I created for engineers to show them some like 12 reasons why I believe that you should look at passive investing over active investing based on the lessons that I've learned. Don't be fooled by HGTV, how easy it looks. There's lots of things that you're not looking, thinking about, LLC costs and just lots of
Sure.
costs that are just not on the radar.
Yeah.
So that's the best way. Talbotinvestments.com.
Love it. Yeah, I think a lot of people are sold the passive investing thing, and th but they think that means buying rental properties and owning them. And there are ways to be a passive investor for sure. I mean, we have a mortgage note fund for accredited investors, and you've got opportunities all the time as well. But I think studying that operator is critical. Hopefully the operators don't read your book, because then we might not have any good operators. Just kidding. Awesome, Stephen. This was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot for joining us. I hate that you got laid off out of nowhere, obviously. And it's one of those, I imagine maybe you're looking back at it, and would you call it a blessing in disguise in hindsight?
Absolutely, 100%. Kicking, punch in the mouth that I needed to
Yeah.
kind of slap you out of the 401k and you're
Right.
good and you stick with a company for 20 years and get the gold watch and you're all set.
Right.
No, it was a punch in the mouth that I needed.
Right. Absolutely. Awesome, Stephen. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate the time.
Great. Thank you, Jamie. Had a great time and best of luck to everyone.
And to the listener, thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Are you ready to transform your financial future through mortgage note investing? Hi, I'm Jamie Bateman, host of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. As a passionate entrepreneur myself and real estate investor myself, I've dedicated my career to empowering investors like you. Join my mentorship program tailored to meet your unique business objectives with a very small financial commitment to get started. Gain access to my personal experience, trusted consultants and vendors, and receive customized mentoring services. You'll get hands-on guidance on everything from determining your buy box and reviewing your bidding processes to managing notes with third-party servicers, handling collateral, and much more. Don't wait. Visit LabradorLending.com to start your journey to abundance today. Let's unlock your full potential together.